From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. Because the COVID-19 pandemic is so critical to us right now, I've decided once again with this week's podcast to focus on this particular challenge. I'm recording this on Monday, April 13th, and I'm going to go through three pieces that are on ACC.org that I think are really quite useful. One will be an expert analysis by Drs. Oren and colleagues on basically the epidemiology, clinical spectrum, and implications for the cardiovascular clinician. Another will be looking at how we think about drug interactions and QT prolongation with COVID-19. And then a very interesting poll that was taken by our interventional group on where have all those ST elevation MIs gone during this pandemic. So first is a wonderful expert analysis that was provided to ACC.org just last week, which I think is really great. And I wanted to just hit a few of the highlights from this that I think are so useful. So COVID-19 is a novel single-stranded RNA virus, and it's the seventh known coronavirus in humans, and it belongs to the same family as SARS and the 2012 Middle East respiratory syndrome virus, MERS-CoV-2. It's thought to have originated in bats because it has about a 90% genomic homology to the bat coronaviruses. Obviously, this virus, compared to SARS and MERS, is much more contagious, and we're seeing that, of course, around the world. The case fatality rate for COVID-19 is probably in the range of 2 to 3%, but it's hard to know because there's so many asymptomatic people. Obviously, we're all familiar that respiratory infection is the most serious organ affected, and mild disease is about 80%, but more severe disease is seen in about 15%. And of course, a fraction of that ends up with severe respiratory distress syndrome along with cardiogenic or distributive shock. The mortality rates, of course, vary depending on the population being studied and the amount of comorbid diseases that are present in the population. If you look at the study so far, the presence of cardiovascular disease among COVID patients is probably in the order of something like diabetes around 10%, hypertension and cardiovascular disease in the range of 15%. And these individuals are at much higher risk. The odds ratio for mortality would be in the range of 3 for diabetes, 20 or more for coronary disease, and also high, of course, for significant lung disease. The mechanisms by which COVID-19 causes cardiovascular injury are still being worked out, of course. It's thought that perhaps cellular binding of the virus to the angiotensin-converting enzyme 2 receptor in the lungs may be the mode of entry. And of course, this has raised concerns about whether agents that affect angiotensin-converting enzymes or ARBs might be important in terms of increasing the risk. It's not clear whether this is the case or not, and the major cardiovascular societies, including ACC, have recommended that we not stop ACE inhibitors or ARBs in patients who have an indication for them. And there are some studies to suggest that ACE receptor levels may be adjusted in patients such that these agents are actually not harmful and potentially even are helpful. The cardiac injury that occurs with SARS can be from a variety of mechanisms. It clearly seems that some patients develop frank myocarditis, but an elevated troponin is seen in 15 to 20% of patients, particularly those who are seriously ill. And this is probably related to myocardial stress and or hypoxemia less often than myocardial injury from a coronary event, for example. And so the studies suggest that we should not rush to the cath lab for patients that just have an isolated troponin release, but rather look for clear signs of plaque destabilization before we consider either thrombolytic agents or potentially going to the cath lab for coronary intervention. Clearly, an elevated troponin is a reflection, first and foremost, then a severity of underlying illness, and not necessarily that there's a fresh coronary plaque rupture. The mechanism of myocarditis is not known. It's probably related to release of cytokines, but this needs to be studied more carefully. Obviously, the way to diagnose COVID-related myocarditis would be MRI, but we have to be mindful of the infectivity of this virus as we think about using both non-invasive and our invasive technology. Clearly, patients who have COVID-19 also appear to have an abnormality related to clotting. Coagulation parameters are elevated, D-dimer particularly, and patients who have a significant increase in D-dimer have a much higher mortality, the odds ratio being as high as 15 to 20. There is a form of DIC that is also present in patients who have a fulminant course with COVID-19. Heart failure is seen in as many as 20% or more. It's unclear again whether this relates to primary muscle injury from the virus or an inflammatory state or hypoxia or an underlying condition. Arrhythmias are also common in 15 to 20%. There are a variety of medications that are being tried to attenuate the response to COVID-19. Remdesivir is an antiviral. It's a broad-spectrum antiviral prodrug that has received an orphan label by the FDA and is currently under investigation. It does have an effect in Ebola, in MERS COVID and SARS COVID, and also respiratory syncytial virus. So there is some hope that these NIH-sponsored trials may yield benefit. You're all familiar with the controversy around chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. These drugs have an antiviral effect by affecting viral entry via endosomes. They also can suppress tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6. Whether or not they work in these patients is still being worked out. There are small studies suggesting that hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine may reduce viral shedding earlier, but we really need the big trials, and they are underway. There's another drug called lopinavir ritonavir. It's a HIV-based protease inhibitor, and that is a drug that's undergoing assessment as well. So this is a wonderful review that's on acc.org. I recommend it to you, but I try to hit the highlights because I think they do provide some perspective as we deal with this challenging pandemic. Now I want to give you just a word or two about the drugs that could affect QTC in patients who are COVID positive. Both hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin can cause torsade de pointe. They can provoke proarrhythmia via mechanisms beyond the effect on the KR channel. And there are limited data about combination therapy. So the combination of azithromycin and hydroxychloroquine we have to think about. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration Adverse Event Reporting System currently has more than 400 cardiac arrests that are listed secondary to either chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, lopinavir, ritonavir, and azithromycin individually. If you think about interventions that you should consider to reduce this risk, you might withhold drugs that could cause QT prolongation if there's already a QTC that's in the region of 500 milliseconds or more, and obviously anybody with congenital long QT syndrome. You probably should monitor cardiac rhythm and QT interval in patients who have a prolonged QTC. Before starting the drugs, we should correct hypokalemia and hypomagnesemia, and also think about other drugs the patient might be on that could potentially also prolong the QT interval. The last mention I want to give to you is just a bit of a reflection. I really appreciate George Vetrovic and our interventional section and some of the things they're providing on acc.org. And they did an interesting poll this week looking at what do you think is going on with STEMI and non-STEMI. It seems like in the COVID era, we are seeing fewer myocardial infarctions. What is the reason for that? And they put out a poll asking the question, if you think there's a reduction, how much is it? And basically, the colleagues out there said that they're seeing as much as a 50% reduction or more in myocardial infarction during this time. And certainly, our own experience here suggests that we're seeing a smaller group of patients with myocardial infarction during the pandemic. And then the question is, what's going on? Why? About half of the audience out there thought that these are being underdiagnosed or unrecognized due to the delayed presentation, or maybe the patients who have COVID were the same patients who are going to come in with STEMI or a non-STEMI. Another possibility is that there's less on-the-job stresses due to shelter in place. About a third of our colleagues thought that might be a mechanism. And others thought that perhaps patients were going to smaller, less busy hospitals out of fear of infection at some of the bigger centers, perhaps. Anyway, it's a fascinating question. If we're seeing a drop in myocardial infarction during the pandemic, what is the cause? I'm not sure, but perhaps as we learn more, we'll have answers to this. Well, I want to thank you for listening again to Eagle's Eye View this week on COVID-19. You know, there's a hub on acc.org that we've put up to give you a lot of information about this. We have sections dealing with clinical guidance and practice. There's clinical perspectives and frontline experience. There's some stuff there on regulatory and reimbursement updates, and some information on COVID-19 and CVD management with on-demand webinars. And we're updating the COVID-19 hub every day to try to get you the latest as you deal with patients who have this unfortunate circumstance infected with COVID-19. So thank you for listening again this week to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly update from acc.org. The articles and key highlights that I've gone over today are available to you on the website, and I hope you use that liberally. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Please stay safe and talk to you again soon. Thank you.